get advice from her on a journey to the underworld. Anchises further tells Aeneas that he must make a journey to the underworld, to the land of the dead, to learn about his descendants and the city he will found. So this instruction to see the Cumaean Sibyl repeats the prophecy of Helenus, as recounted in Book 3 of the Aeneid. This is the second time that Aeneas has been told once he arrives in Italy, he must seek out the Cumaean Sibyl. Aeneas is fortified by this vision of his father. He regains his sense of mission, and he agrees with Naute's advice and Anchises' advice. He lets any of the Trojans who are weary and have lost their heart for the journey stay behind in Sicily with Acestes. So in effect, each member of Aeneas' group, each Trojan, faces individually the question of whether to stay with the past, literally, with the buried Anchises, or to go on to the future, literally, in company with the young Ascanius. The women and some of the men stay in Sicily. So when Aeneas embarks again, his group has been honed down to the young, the fit, the eager, and the male, at least as it's presented in Book 5. We'll find out later that at least one woman does go with them. Now, notice that Virgil here has very neatly disposed of the Trojan women, just as he disposed of Creusa in Book 2 of the Aeneid. He didn't kill off all the Trojan women. I guess that would have been a little too much. But he has to get rid of them somehow, because not only Aeneas, but also Aeneas's men must, when they reach Italy, be able to marry Italian wives. The Romans' conception of themselves was that their race was an amalgamation of Trojans and native Latins. That means that Aeneas's men must be free to marry Trojan wives and beget the ancestors of the Romans. And so Virgil has very efficiently disposed of these awkward Trojan wives who might throw a monkey wrench into the works of the coming Roman race by having them all stay in Sicily. And so Aeneas sets out on the final crucial leg of his journey. And Book 5 culminates with another conversation between Venus and Jupiter. Venus is, understandably, concerned about Juno's continuing hatred for Aeneas. Juno has stirred up trouble among the Trojan women. There's no reason to think that Juno will stop stirring up trouble, and Venus is, as I say, understandably concerned about this. Jupiter promises her that she will have to mourn the death of only one Trojan between the departure from Sicily and the arrival at Cumae, where Aeneas will speak to the Cumaean Sibyl. Jupiter says only one Trojan will die for Venus to mourn. And this refers to a character named Palinurus, the pilot of Aeneas' ship. As Book 5 ends, we're given a very vivid description of Palinurus falling asleep at his post as he's piloting the ship at night. The god Sleep himself comes and lulls Palinurus to sleep. Palinurus tries very hard to stay awake, but Sleep himself is working against Palinurus. Palinurus does fall asleep, falls overboard, and is drowned. Now, Palinurus, in many ways, reflects a character from the Odyssey, a companion of Odysseus named Elpenor, who dies unexpectedly right before Odysseus makes his journey to the underworld. Palinurus dies unexpectedly at the end of Book 5, just before Aeneas is going to make his descent to the underworld in Book 6. And in both the Odyssey and the Aeneid, as we'll see, the hero, Odysseus or Aeneas, meets the spirit, meets the soul of this companion whom he had not known was dead right away when he enters the underworld. So Palinurus's ghost will appear and speak to Aeneas, just as Elpenor's ghost appeared and spoke to Odysseus. However, Elpenor's death in the Odyssey is caused through Elpenor's own foolishness. He's drunk, he's careless, he's trying to climb down off the roof of a palace, slips on the ladder and breaks his neck. Palinurus's death is very different. Palinurus is trying his best to perform his duty. He's not careless, he's not drunk, and he is killed not through his own carelessness, but because a god, Sleep in this case, directly intervenes and directly causes his death. So while there is pathos in the death of Elpenor, in the death of someone by pure accident and someone who is so unimportant that Odysseus doesn't even notice his absence until he meets his ghost in the underworld, there's a very different kind of pathos in the death of Palinurus, someone who is trying his best to fulfill his duty, but is killed despite his best efforts.